Good morning, everyone. Appreciate you spending some time with the show this morning. Out of the gate, we talk economy. We're going to talk about gas prices separate from the economy, partially this morning, because we are going to talk with Patrick Kahan from Gas Buddy. We're going to do that at 9:05. We're going to talk about the record prices in Arizona, the record prices across the country, and the effect of that here in just a moment, as we've been talking about this quite a bit. But we start off talking in a different location, same importance, but a different part of the economy. And this morning, we start with housing. Chandler, number one nationally for increase in two-bedroom rent, according to a report. Average two-bedroom prices in the East Valley city of Chandler jumped 68% year over year to $2,900 in April. This is where we see such difficulty begin. When you are paying when you're using every penny you have to keep a roof over your head, food in your children's belly, and gasoline to get to work or diesel fuel to get to work, whatever it is, you are going to see people pay a heavy price. Chandler was the only Arizona city on the list in the top 10 and beat out other cities where rent grew, including Miami at 59%, Portland at 52, Austin, Texas at 50, and Philadelphia at 48. So Brian Carberry from Rent.com told Arizona's Morning News that Chandler's rent rise was likely due to higher demand than other Metro Phoenix cities. As we see people spilling out of the Metro Phoenix area, you know, everything about in real estate is about location. But now you are seeing people having to compromise other things to make sure they have a roof over their head. At some point, you reach a breaking point. People are not going to be able to afford these things. So let's talk about where that is. We're going to talk about housing very quickly. Yesterday, we had Bill Gates, Board of Supervisors, talking about the county budget. Part of the county budget was affordable housing projects, but it was also another area where he talked about working through the red tape. This is where I want to start this morning, with solutions on the horizon, but how long will they take? This is what Mr. Gates said yesterday.
I know that people a lot of times don't want projects in their backyard. They may like things the way that they are, but what's important is that we work with the developers, we work with the neighborhoods to figure out ways to bring in projects that are going to help address this affordability issue. I mean, this is a real concern, not only for people, you know, some that are teetering on homelessness, quite frankly, but also it can be a real impediment to further growth. And there are a lot of companies that are looking to locate here. That's a positive.
That is a positive, but we are also seeing that this may slow down dramatically. We'll get to that in a moment. But for the housing crunch, the cities of Glendale and Tempe are planning to build affordable apartment complexes as rents continue to soar. We've talked about cutting through this red tape. They call it NIMBYism, not in my backyard. And everybody says it needs to be done, but nobody wants it close to where they live, or many people don't want it close to where they live. This is going to become a serious issue. The idea of we are just going to build houses and then charge very little for them with government involvement, I think, is a dangerous prospect. I think then what you have now, it's a burden on the taxpayer. It's a burden on the cities and towns. Building affordable housing comes with demand. One of the things that was great about Arizona when I moved here, and I moved here in 1995, and one of the things that I have touted about the state of Arizona for a long time is the diversity of availability of housing here. We had everything from entry-level housing, and when you're talking about buying a home, all the way up to mansions for the mega-rich, you know, from all across the city. We are seeing now that beginning at the people that are of lower income, we are seeing up into the middle class, families being priced out of housing. It's going to affect the schools your kids go to. It's going to affect a lot of different things. And when that happens, you're going to see a dramatic slowdown in other parts of the economy. What else contributes to all of this? Two things. First, summer electric bill shocker is coming. According to Harvard University economics professor, argued that once the Fed raises interest rates, it may be difficult to control the economy. Summer is right around the corner. The U.S. Energy Information Administration estimates that the average there will be an increase of 3.9% in electricity costs to households. So let's talk practical application. This is this morning from Zero Hedge. We talked about this, and many of you remember, and I suggest you follow her. Her name is Kristen Bentz. Kristen with an I, Bentz, B-E-N-T-Z. Follow her online. KB Advisory Group is her company. She is a retail analyst. And so as brilliant as she is at being a retail analyst, it's because she looks at the overall picture and is able to, and has been for years, which is why she was so sought after on Wall Street. She was able to predict the direction of the retail market. whether it was the luxury market or it was the discount market of Costco and Walmart and Target. She was able to predict where buyers were going to go and where the problems were going to arise. She was very accurate on this show in predicting at the beginning of COVID some of the companies that were not going to survive the shutdowns that were happening. She's just, that's where her wheelhouse is. We had her on to talk about what fuel prices and delivery prices were going to do to the economy. And this is where the two mesh together. We talk specifics of fuel prices at 9:05. But this is where Target and Walmart have plunged. I'm going to read just the beginning of this story. While share prices of retailers have been all over the map in 2022, this week's post-earnings plunges in Target and Walmart are highlighting the damage inflation can do to the profit margin. So we are watching companies lose their shirts. These are the companies that employ people that are at the lower end, usually lower end of the economic spectrum. They don't pay a whole lot of money. People make a living, but barely make a living many times that are working there. And they sell to the segment of our society that is lower income, usually, not always, not exclusively. But they are not luxury items. So if you see these companies with profits plunging, two things may happen together, or one of the two will happen. Either you start seeing layoffs, or you start seeing price increases, or a combination of the two. Delivery costs have gone through the roof. We are seeing records with fuel prices. So the American economy is in a dangerous place. As a matter of fact, the CEO of I think it was Wells Fargo said we're in trouble, that there is no doubt we are going to see a downturn. I want you to hear the Fed chair Jerome Powell was asked by the Wall Street Journal about challenge of avoiding a recession in the U.S. economy.
A lot of people, though, are skeptical that you can get inflation down to your 2% goal without a recession. What do you know that they don't?
I don't know anything that they don't. I mean, I would say there's no disagreement here, really. It is going to be a challenging task, and it's been made more challenging in the last couple of months.
So they're saying it's more and more challenging to avoid a recession. I'm going to read this quote. U.S. economy headed into a downturn, according to the CEO of Wells Fargo. No question is the quote. There is no question that's the direction we're heading. It's going to be hard to avoid some kind of a recession. This is what you just heard Jerome Powell say. So back to my argument that I always make about policy. We're going to get specifically into fuel prices, but I believe it begins and ends there. We can talk about supply chain issues. We can talk about demand after COVID, all of these things that are going on. I want you to remember that about four years ago, before COVID-19, we were seeing gas prices that were extremely low. We had an economy that was roaring and going like crazy, the lowest unemployment rate in 50 years, wage increases that were going through the roof, and absolutely no inflation. That was the key to the economy then. People were making more money, and it felt like they were making more money. It wasn't a cost of living increase and maintaining their status quo. It was the more money you were making, it wasn't costing you more to live, and people were in a much better place. Does that mean that everything there was answered by and the perfect solution were the policies of that administration? No, it doesn't. But what it does mean is we have seen dramatic policy shifts, especially when it comes to energy production. We have seen those since this administration took office. And one of the things we're going to talk about later in the show, not with Patrick Gahan at 9:05, I want to keep it apolitical and just talk about what people can do going into the Memorial Day holiday. But when you look at the policies, we have once again gone to the dictatorship of Venezuela. The Venezuelan government has destroyed their economy. If you don't go back to the days of Hugo Chavez, if you don't remember how wealthy that nation was when they took over and the socialists decided what they were going to do is make things fair, and I'm doing air quotes because that's exactly what they said they were going to do. Everything was going to be done in the interest of fairness. And you look 20 years later, at the destruction of their economy. The absolute destruction of their economy. And this is exactly what we have to be preparing for. We have to look at the mistakes of other people. And it doesn't matter what your political leanings are. It is what works and what doesn't, which is why so many people look at fuel prices and they blame this administration, knowing that the policies of going in the direction, everything comes through the direction of climate change. That's what everything is done. We're going to talk about that more this morning as the show goes on. We have to shift gears. We're going to go back to the Roe v. Wade conversation because an Arizona congressman, once again, another one of the people on the left side of the aisle, connecting Roe v. Wade to the economy. Is it a heartless thing to do? Is it something that is a very good point that's being made? We're going to talk about that coming up here in just a moment. Stick around.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with us. The Roe v. Wade conversation is still carrying on around the country, and it's something we all should talk about. Should Roe v. Wade return to the states if the Supreme Court decides that Roe v. Wade is not a protected right under the Constitution, that abortion isn't because of Roe v. Wade, that it's the states have a right to deal with the way they see fit, it will be sent back to Arizona. So we're going to get to what may happen here as well in just a moment. And I think everybody needs to temper their anger and enthusiasm about this topic because of what is probably going to happen nationwide. But I want you to hear Greg Stanton, congressman from Arizona, equating. There have been many people, including our Fed chair, Treasury secretary, has talked about this and how it affects the economy, which it's hard not to talk about this topic without talking in these terms and not have it seem very callous. But this is Greg Stanton, Congressman Greg Stanton's take on Roe v. Wade and the economy.
Has anything done more to help women gain the footing in the workplace and advance professional careers and advancement, which has been great for the American economy? So Roe v. Wade has benefited everyone in America, whether they know it or not, whether they even appreciate it or not, because it was part of the feminist movement, but that made it clear that, like, we need the talent of women in the workplace, and that's been a great benefit to our entire country and our entire economy.
Roe v. Wade has been good to the economy. I just look at this maybe because of the way I view abortion, but it seems to be a pretty cold-hearted for the people in this world on that side of the political aisle that say greed resides in the Republican Party, that it when it's all about money and all you care about is profits. That statement to me has a little bit of an edge to it. But I'm not saying any of this to cast insults. I'm saying that they are defending this by using the economy as a way to defend it. There's another side to this if you wanted to talk about the economy, which I haven't heard anybody on the Republican side of the aisle say, and maybe they have, and I'm glad they haven't. But why don't people start making the argument that, you know, we have millions more jobs available in America than we do people to do those jobs. And if we hadn't been aborting so many human beings, maybe there would be more people in the workforce. I mean, and that's a crass, callous way of looking at it as well. But those arguments about the economy and the difference between right and wrong, it's pretty amazing to me. But I want to talk specifically about Arizona and what's happening. There is a push here in Arizona. There is a group to try to get a constitutional amendment on the November ballot has cleared significant hurdles. Backers first needed to submit 356,000 valid voter signatures by July 7th. It's a tight deadline, but they are trying to do this. A coalition of healthcare professionals, activists, advocates behind the effort, calling themselves Arizonans for Reproductive Freedom, submitted an application for the measure. So they may try to get the abortion conversation by virtue of an amendment, by virtue of a ballot initiative, onto Arizona's ballot. I don't like our propositional form of government. I never have. I never will. I think it's a lazy form of government. But I would be curious to know how the voters in Arizona would respond to this, because the outrage that we are seeing by the activists is not shared within the Democratic Party across the board. I'm not saying that they're not pro-choice. There are many people that are pro-choice that are not excited about fighting in favor of it. And it's the overwhelming opinion from people that I've talked to that are pro-choice, many, many, many of them have said, I would not ever do it, but it's none of my business. That is a tepid support at the very best. These are not people that are taking to the streets. These are not people that are taking to the streets in these protests and anger. And as the head of the Women's March said, if you remember the day after the Trump inauguration, the Women's March said that this is going to be a summer of rage. That's what we are going to have. We are going to have a summer of rage. There's no doubt about it. I think the conversation is and always has been about where life begins. That's it. This conversation isn't about the economy. This conversation isn't about women in the workplace. This conversation is, when does this become a human life? Because the moment that it does, it deserves the same constitutional protections as any other person in our country. Any person. And in the world, we give people constitutional protections once they come into our country. So it's not just Americans, it's people that come here. So we should be having that conversation. And if we could do it like adults, and I think on both sides of the issue, we are trying to rescue the next generation. Every one of us on both sides of the issue, the people that are pro-choice are saying we need to protect this right for the future women in this country. And the pro-life crowd is saying we need to protect future generations of children from being aborted in the womb. We both see the same significance, but the argument and the conversation is about when life begins. When we start having the conversation about what women have a right to do with their body, I think they're 100% right. I've said before, in public, tattoo it, pierce it, cut it off. I don't care what you do with your body. But I truly believe you're carrying a human life inside your body, and that life deserves constitutional protection. That's just my stance. So let's argue about that. Let's argue about when it truly is a human life. It can't be a human life in your mind when you want the pregnancy carried to term, and a glob of cells when you want to terminate it. It either is a life or it isn't. And we should argue about that. I mean that respectfully. Argue about that point and see what the consensus is of the American people. When is it a life? And stop the arguing, the fighting, the screaming, and the summer of rage. But that's wishful thinking. That is not going to happen. Coming up, Gatos joins me, and it's the Big Q poll question of the day. We'll get to that coming up in just a moment.
The Gatos Big Q poll question, brought to you by your Valley Toyota dealers.
Hey, good morning, Gatos.
Oh, Big Swole, how are we doing today, buddy?
I'm doing well. So what's with the phone call? Where's the Gatos? What, 3,000? Is that what you call it?
I'm on the road. I'm going to get my hair did.
You are doing another haircut. I figured that's what was happening.
I've got to go get my hair did. You know, I'm passing all these gas stations, 512,
yeah,
520.
Mm-hmm.
This is outrageous. Outrageous. I've got to go get my hair did, and then I got to fill up my tank. And I'm starting to get the shakes, man.
On Monday, I spent $111 filling my tank.
Yeah.
On Monday.
You got one of those big gas guzzler cars, right?
I do.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I drive an Expedition.
I have to, unfortunately, put the expensive gas in my car.
Yep.
So I've been paying $5 a gallon for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, it's usually been like $5.19 or $5.20 or something like that.
Yes.
Now it's going to be like $6.
Yes, it is.
$6.
Mm-hmm.
This is your fault. I'm just going to say that right now. This is your fault. I don't know. I have to blame somebody.
Well, it is when I look at what it's doing. Who I really feel bad for when I'm at QT. I was just telling Sharp this morning. When I'm at QT, there's a QT by my house. Is anybody putting diesel in a vehicle right now? Especially if you have to buy the more expensive diesel for the commercial truck drivers.
Yeah, they're paying an enormous amount of money. Yeah. I don't see anything stopping this. I mean,
no, not in the near future.
He let go of all the reserves. That didn't work. I think it's something we're just going to have to dig in on. I think $6 a gallon by, you know, mid June or July, and I'm talking regular unleaded. I think we're getting a six, man.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy.
It's going to be absolutely crazy. So today's Q, I basically asked, are you with $5 a gallon of gas in Phoenix, are you going to cancel your trip for Memorial Day? Because we've got a lot of people that want to hit the road.
Great question.
You know, post-pandemic stuff. So
yeah.
It's basically yes, no, or hey, I've been, you know, we weren't going to go anywhere anyway. I think most people are still going to go, man. I think they're going to still go and travel, even with these gas prices. That's what the latest polls show.
Or not as far, maybe. Who knows? You know?
Yeah, maybe don't go to California.
Yep, that's a great idea anytime.
Don't go to California?
Correct.
Right. Go up right. North.
Well, great question.
Enjoy the weather.
I like the question, Gatos.
All right, man.
I'll talk to you soon. It's weird having him on the phone. The Big Q poll question today brought to you by your Valley Toyota dealers. Coming up just after 9, Patrick DeHaan from Gas Buddy. He is the senior petroleum analyst there. We're going to talk about gas prices, how long they're going to stay high, and how high they might go in Arizona. It's all right around the corner, so I hope you'll stick around for it.